Board of Finance and Budget Committee.
Thank you very much. If you pause a moment so the team can get organized there in just a second and get the folks together. While we're doing that, I would like to note the number of individuals on the Finance and Budget Committee, and all of them but one are here today. Myself, Regent Higman, Regent Johnson, Regent Kennedy, and the only absence is Regent. So today, administrative representative, of course, is no stranger to this group. And I thank you very much for your participation and your hard work to prepare for this meeting. We have several items on the agenda, several action items and also important informational items, as you will see on your agenda format. The first one is FB1, acceptance of the NCAA agreed-upon procedures report. And before we have a motion, I think we need a presentation. Any comments there?
Yes, today we have Brett Shelley, Senior Manager of Control Forward, who is responsible for our first two items. So we'll go ahead and have him present both of them. The first one is the NCAA compliance report. This is when we have a new regents that maybe Dr. Birch might not be familiar with it. And the second is the radio and TV audits that were performed. So at this point, we'll go ahead and proceed with a presentation on both of those. You have them as separate.
You should have those in delivered or have them with you today if you have references.
Thank you, Ann. Just want to start out, thank you for allowing me to be here today. We appreciate the relationship we have with the university and look forward to continuing that relationship. So as we go through the first document, the agreed upon procedures required by the NCAA, as you're probably aware from previous years, this is a required procedure that we go through. The NCAA does have set procedures that they would like us to look at. This is not an audit, so we aren't giving an opinion on these, but we are going through these procedures as required and reporting any findings or exceptions as we go through. And at a high level, I don't want to go through this entire report, but pleased to report there were no exceptions as we went through those procedures. So as you'll see in the report, there are about, I think there's around 70 procedures that we go through. Actually, I guess there's up to 81 now, 84 now. So there's 84 procedures that we go through in various things. Primarily, we're looking at the income and expenses related to the athletic. And no exceptions were noted. So those are presented there. As you go to the back pages, pages 17 and 18, are the statements of revenues and expenses. So those are the schedules that we were looking at as we went through the procedures. If you wanted to go through those. And then we have a few additional notes to those statements that are
with that report in front of me and that report, thank you very much. Do I have a motion to accept the NCAA agreed-upon procedures report? I have a motion, Regent Johnson. A second, please.
Second.
Regent Kennedy. Now the floor is open for discussion. Any questions directed to any discussion about the NCAA agreed-upon procedures report? There being none, who would like to call for a vote, those who will accept this report, say aye.
Aye.
Those against, no. Motion passes. Please proceed.
Sure. And then we will next look at the radio. So this is an audit of the financial statements of the radio station. Pages 1 and 2 is the independent auditor's report. So this is our report to you. Reporting on the financial statements, and we are reporting an unqualified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance that we can provide. So these financial statements are materially correct, and there are no material misstatements included in here. I don't want to go through this entire financial statements, but I would just point out a couple of things. On pages 3 through 7 is the management's discussion and analysis. This is a required part of the report. It really just gives you some of the highlights financially for the year. And so you'll see a few of those on page 3. Primarily, as you look at the change in net position, your net income was about $145,000 this year. Some of the revenues, operating revenues and expenses, both decreased, as well as non-operating revenues decreased, but you still did have a positive net income of $145,000. On page 8 starts the actual financial statements. So you have your statement of net position, which is equivalent to the balance sheet. On page 9 is your statement of activities or your income statement. Nothing significant to report here. For the most part, activities and balances were consistent with the previous year. And I would just also mention on the radio and with the TV that we'll discuss next, there were no new accounting standards, no policy changes as it relates to any accounting policies on the radio or TV. So from that standpoint, everything was fairly consistent to the prior year. Anyone have any questions on the radio or on the TV? So the last document you have is for the TV. Again, you have the same report on page 1 and 2, our independent auditor's report. We are, again, providing an unqualified opinion on the TV as well. So the highest level of assurance there. Again, you do have the management's discussion and analysis. Starting on page 3, and again, giving the highlights there, the net position or your net income this year was a positive $168,000. So again, it's operating at a profit. You did see an increase on the operating revenues, which is positive about $41,000. We also saw a corresponding increase in operating expenses of about $35,000. And again, starting on page 8 is the financial statements, and then continuing on from there is the notes of the financial statements. And again, nothing significant to report there. Questions on the TV?
Yes, please. Is it something that needs to be done? Is it a question direct, or we'll have a discussion later? Yes, please.
This probably isn't in the purview of this report. I understand what it is, but I was just kind of impressed with the increase in revenues. You don't bring any perspective on how that's happened. That's not part of your
report. No, not particularly.
I mean, it's a good thing.
Berkeley, see if you want to comment, David.
David, would you like to comment on that?
Just 1 second, I'm going to get my opinion. I'm going to give you a good opinion.
Somebody get something right up. I'm curious.
Okay. We had two additional forms of revenue increase. We had additional membership, which is always a positive, and we had some additional athletics-related revenue due to increased involvement with television production.
That's very positive.
Thank you,
Barbara. That's very good. Any more questions directed to our friend from If that's the case, could I accept, someone make a motion to accept the separate auditor's reports for the financial statements?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any more discussion on these matters? I'd like to call for a vote. Those in favor say yay.
Yay.
Yeah. I mix it up this time. And nay on the button opposite. Passed. All right. FB3, acceptance of the second quarter statement of review and expenditures. Ann, would you like to report?
Yes, this is your quarterly report on revenues and expenditures 6 months into the fiscal year. And we will make a change in the format, as I know that we're still confusing some folks about what that first column means. The first column means the annual budget, not the budget for 6 months only in the fiscal year. So what we do is we compare revenue and expenses as of the end of December to where are we in relationship to a full fiscal year. So I think next time we'll probably label that one a little differently. Green eye sheet accountants that look at it a little differently. Revenue and expenses are tracking reasonably closely to last year's. So from a variance standpoint, there aren't any surprises. And at some point, we've, over the last couple of meetings, talked about that there will be an impact on a slight decline in enrollment as it relates to our tuition and fees. Through December, includes some billing for spring semester. This is not a cash basis report. So it has fall fees in it, and it has some of the billings for spring based on those students that were registered by the end of the fall semester. The fall numbers is what I can confirm. We didn't meet budget, but it's a manageable number. It's approximately $600,000 short of budget, which is less than 1% in comparison to our incremental for fall. So it's not unreasonable to say that if they were here in the fall, that even the best retention model is not going to bring them back in the spring. So at the next quarterly meeting, I'll be able to update you on spring revenue. The anticipated shortfall from budget, again, in fall was 3.8%. Administrative accounting has been kept apprised that between now and June 30th, we will manage to find one-time funds to cover that shortfall. Are there any questions?
And I think I could say this, but it's essentially the shortfall pretty much all these tuition fees.
Yes.
Not anything else.
Yeah. That's correct.
Any more questions for Ann? I don't want to rush anybody. This is a very important issue. I'd like to accept the motion for filing the 2014-15 second quarter statement of reviews and expenditures. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second. Any more discussion? If none, yes, in favor?
Yes.
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 No for a negative. So moved. FB4, approval of the personnel actions, faculty and staff. You have the report in front of you. Really not a comment, it's a pretty self-explanatory report.
Yes, sir. We can answer any questions. Administrative counsel, Mr. Peter, should there be any personnel action that you would like to have an explanation for?
Move for approval.
Wait a second. Second. Any more discussion? Call for a vote. Yes, we're in favor?
Yes.
No?
Chair, really, I'll need the record to reflect that I will have to abstain from this vote.
Certainly understood. 26. Motion passes. FB5, approval of the 2015-16 tuition and fee schedule. Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate when you take a break at this time? I notice that it's about 10:30. If anyone needs to do that before we go to this, this may be a little more lengthy discussion.
Let's take a 10-minute break.
10-minute break. Thank you very much. Jared, thank you very much. I'm going to be here just to check the delivery since I got the floor, and I'm going to call my colleague.
Thank you. So, John Ridley asked me to kind of introduce SGA elections that are currently going on right now, especially for those in that room, in the room and on campus every day. I'm sure you've seen posters and yard signs popping up all around campus. And so I want to introduce the two candidates that are most pertinent to this body, which will be the new SGA president, who will take that position and hopefully spearhead on forward next year. We have Brian Chisholm, who is actually here with us today, going to be a senior next year, one of the presidential candidates, and also J. Todd Ritchie is the other candidate. He's a spirit master, so you may have ran into him at an event sometime during the year, but I think either one of them is excellently qualified for the job, and so at the next meeting I'll be announcing to you whichever one wins.
Thank you very much. Hope that wasn't too far off. So we now have a another action item, and then we'll move into information items. FB5, approval of the 2015-16 tuition and fee schedule. And we have a report, pretty complete, I think, and it's prepared, and Julia put together for all of us. Does everyone have that report? Very good. And would you like to address
To announce to you the Council on Post-Secondary Education approves our tuition and fees. So after the full board approval, we'll submit them for CPE approval. When the CPE approves them, they consider them in two different regards. One being, what's the resident undergraduate rate, and what are the other rates? The reason I separate those two is that the CPE's focus is on affordability at the resident undergraduate level. Majority of these rates are subject to what this board believes and the administration believes are appropriate market-driven rates and what's needed to operate programs. For example, the doctoral programs are supposed to be self-supporting. That was one of the variables for getting doctoral programs, is that that they would not have to be subsidized. The rates that you have before you are on page 8 of your agenda book, and therefore, when I take them in components, the undergraduate rate for fiscal year 16, based on the CPE's two-year approval, is a 3.1% increase in the resident undergraduate tuition. The rate we are bringing forward to you is, I had 3.8, I didn't check it. But I thought it was 3.7%, which is the 4,471 for resident undergraduate on page 8. Included in that number, this is a schedule of tuition and mandatory student fees. Included in that number are the mandatory fees listed below, and it does include the $30 for a full-time student for Creason bonds. So that is why the rate is not 3.1, it goes to 3.7 by the fact that student fee would be included in that rate structure. You'll see some varying rates that I said are market-driven, as they relate to graduate programs, doctoral programs. The new rate I would like to point out to you that we're recommending
is under the graduate rates. You'll note Kentucky P-12 educator. It's a rate per credit hour, which would discount for that select population how much they pay for their first course, and then 3-hour course, and then how much they would pay for over 3 hours during that specific semester. Do you have it still?
Is everybody on page where we are on this?
Page 8.
Yeah, I just want to be sure because I think there's something that is very positive.
So we're, we're recommending a new rate, and I just wanted the dean to give you just a little background of how this recommendation came forward.
Thank you very much. And the first comment that I will make really builds upon what John had shared earlier. This is connected with the economic engine of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Our educators are the key to successful students in the P-12 environment. Successful students in the P-12 become the pipeline for WKU. And the quality of students that we get here does make a difference in the experiences we're able to provide, the level of knowledge and skill they can take with them on graduation, how they contribute to the economic environment, the world in which we live. And we're trying to make things affordable for educators. Many of them have not experienced a pay raise for a number of years. If they have, it's a minimal pay raise. And we have to be careful that we provide a quality education within a cost that's going to be attractive to those individuals and educators. So that's really the background in bringing this forward, is to help educators out in the P-12 environment in the Commonwealth of Kentucky to make graduate level education more affordable for them.
Thank you for that initiative.
The last component of this recommendation relates to two of our three mandatory student fees, student athletics fee and student centers fee. We're recommending that they be increased 3%. Consistent with the tuition rate increase, and that obviously, based on the action of this board, does not include changing the $70 fee that was approved that supports the Downing Student Union bond issue. So that one remains at $70. These two fees have been frozen for 2 years, and we're recommending a minimal increase to support those operations. That's my overview, and I can answer questions.
Any specific questions to Anne's report? We will have time for discussion once we get the motion on the floor. Director Anne, anyone?
Most students program to
yes.
Part-time students pay based on a 12 credit hour for undergraduate and 9 for graduate.
Any more questions for Anne? She'll be available for others. The motion before us is to approve the 2015-2016 tuition and fee schedule. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Kennedy. The motion is open. All the vote, please. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
No, not on the motion. I'm sorry. Pardon. I was ahead of myself. No, we're not doing that. Okay. That was the discussion. Yes, please.
I have several questions. I am concerned about one question is based on Mr. Kennedy's motion on the prorating. That could change that $30. Could it, Ann? Is it likely to change the $30 fee for full-time students on the parking garage?
We had a conversation in the school committee, and Nikki and I talked. The intent all along was that it was $30 for full-time and prorated the part-time.
So that's already.
So that one, that there's no issue on that's how we do our mandatory fees.
Mr. Chairman, I have a second. I have a concern about increasing fees, and I understand in student centers that we really are providing a lot more services and support through the expanded student center operations, and I think that's a good thing. And I think it's understandable that we probably have to shore it up a little bit. But I am particularly concerned about raising the athletic fee. And it isn't because I don't think they need the money. It's because everybody needs the money. And when you look at the chart that Ann provided, you will see that over 7 years there, from basically 2011-12 up through 2012-13, there was a pretty significant increase, 3-point-something increase in athletic fee. And I will tell you that athletics isn't the only one who needs money. You've got other kinds of programs across the campus and academic programs that need the money. And as student enrollments drop, everybody's affected. So I'm not unsympathetic to the athletic part, but I am concerned about taking additional base dollars and increasing the athletic fee, recognizing that lower enrollments hit them. And I think everybody is affected by it, and given the fact that right now 70.2% of all those mandatory fees are going to athletics. It just seems reasonable if we're going to all have to kind of cut back that athletics will, in good times, the fee goes up and you benefit. In lower enrollments, it goes down. And I don't think it's fair to single out athletics when we can't look at that problem for all the other units on campus.
Your question of
it's a comment, but I think it's
let me add for the benefit of the board that athletics has had to deal with declining enrollment and declining fee revenue. It does not exempt them from any reductions in state funding or tuition shortfalls. So the shortfall that's on the graph is only one component. We do ask athletics to participate in any other university-wide reduction.
Well, the student, same thing with student centers. Student parish gets hit with budget cuts, and we face a budget reduction or reallocation, and so does athletics. So these two particular enterprises get hit double when there is a budget reduction combined with the enrollment dynamic.
I think that's really true. The difference for me is the student center doesn't really have revenue-generating capacity, and athletics does have revenue-generating capacity. And most other departments on campus do not have revenue-generating capacity. So it just seems like we're singling athletics to accommodate loss of students and fees when we're not accommodating anybody else.
This is part of the base budget. We indicated a draw on the base. This doesn't affect the base budget. This is the fee that the fee in effect the base budget then pick it up.
Yes, the Council on Post-Secondary Education, when they give us a 3.1% increase, it includes your fees. So essentially, if there's not an input, a $6 increase in the athletic fee, the recommendation is still $4,741 for a resident undergraduate student.
Tuition
and fees of the
question. Let me ask this question. I'm sympathetic to what I'm saying, but let's assume that we don't approve this particular increase of 3% in athletic budget. Does that not have a corresponding effect upon the university's overall budget when it comes to the amount that we appropriate directly? And it could have an adverse effect into the budget, because now the athletic department has a little bit of money for which we don't have to do it.
We have a budget process that does not increase athletics beyond what we would do for the entire campus. For example, if we have salary increase, we would fund the salary increase for athletics. If we had an increase in postage and we wanted to fund it for the campus, we would increase it for athletics. We fund the scholarship increases fund the grant and aid increases. So there would not be any other increase that would go to the athletics other than what's generated by their fee and their self-generated. So they wouldn't have any mechanism of them coming back and say, we need additional money for athletics.
Well, my question goes, it does put pressure.
Yes.
And that pressure can come back to adversely affect the if you didn't increase the fees or kind of.
Well, I think it adversely affects.
I'm looking for a solution if there is
one. Yeah, it adversely affects athletics to have that fee frozen for 2 years, potentially for a third year. While I obviously we are in a different conference, we have different variables to be successful. We did look at our athletic fee in comparison to that group. About mid-range. But again, it's a significant revenue stream for athletics. It's probably, I'm guessing, about a third of their budget. And to have a source of your budget frozen with no ability to adjust the rate for 3 years is a significant concern.
Yeah, and if I could.
Yes.
One point I'd like to make, Regent Birch, to your point that everybody needs the money, the thing I would want to point out here is we had the money. I mean, this is not something that's unprecedented. This is simply restoring a mechanism that had been in place for many years and was taken out 2 years ago. And because it was taken out, and coupled with the enrollment decline for four consecutive years now, the money that we in athletics have received from student fees has been lower than it was in 2011. So certainly costs have gone up dramatically since 2011, but our student fee portion of revenue has gone down each year since 2011, and part of the reason is simply because this mechanism that had been in place for many years was taken out. It's not something unprecedented to have this. It's simply restoring something that had been on the books for quite some time until the last couple of years.
Are you referring to the happy fee?
Yes.
Well, the athletics was the only funding unit in campus that was allowed to keep the happy fee as long as it did. And the happy fee meant you were guaranteed an automatic increase whether we had new dollars or not. And no one else on campus, I mean, for many, many years, happy fees greatly advantaged you. So I think it was a matter of kind of fairness. It said, you know, athletics fares on fees comparable to how the rest of the university does. So taking away happy wasn't. It was taking away a guarantee that no one else on campus had, and I think it was a very fair thing to take
no,
away.
No, I understand that.
And again, I'm not.
Well, I think there were others in the HIPAA.
There were centers.
There were centers, but they came away. But my point is, the key on this is enrollment. I mean, technically, athletics would be serving their students, need more money, and my concern is just reasonableness. It sends a terrible message. We've been able to give, what, in 4 or 5 years, 1% increase in salary faculty and staff. We don't have the monies. Departments are cutting positions. And to put additional cost on our budget at a time when everybody else is cutting, I think we all have to live with the revenue we've got. When enrollment grows, athletic benefits. And my understanding was, Chuck Ransdell, that we really were going to see some additional revenue potential from our elevated activities, our higher level of participation. I would love to see you have more money, but I'd like you to see it the same way everybody else does. That is, our enrollments go up, the fee goes up.
Well, and we have received more revenue. However, because of state budget cuts and our portion in athletics of that, coupled with declining enrollment, coupled with reduction in student fees, and then you add in the natural expenses that occur, have minimized the impact of that. And, you know, everyone in athletics has had that 1% or 0% raise, too. You know, so our administration is part of that. And we've had faced this. I mean, 10% of our sports have been cut, you know, because of budget cuts. We had to cut men's soccer and we had to cut men's tennis. So I don't want anybody to think that we haven't had some pain and suffering. We certainly have.
Okay. Could I ask one more question?
Sure.
I know what the impact is on the academic departments when we lose numbers. I mean, we lose positions, we lose other kinds of budget resources, we lose discretionary funds. What will be the impact of not getting an increase at this time? What specific impact would it have?
It'll be an academic impact because this money would be used to go toward summer school costs, which are not part of the scholarship. And that's a vital component as to why we've been able to graduate at such a high level. You know, our graduation rates and our GPAs are very strong, much higher than the regular student body in comparison. And a big reason for that is because now, in the competitive landscape we're in, athletes at every university compete year-round and they train year-round. And so to be here in the summer and train but yet take classes at the same time, it's a huge benefit and enables them to graduate on time.
No place else? I mean, the academic cut has to come first as opposed to somewhere else in the program?
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to sit and visit with you on this. I mean, we have a pretty lean budget. So, you know, there aren't a lot of areas to cut, you know, anymore. Summer school is an area of growth that's been a very good investment. But because it's not part of the scholarship, we need new money to meet those costs.
Can't ask me to make a comment or any of us quite yet about how we're going to deal with the budget reduction, the budget redirection coming up in the next month or two. So I think there's going to be dramatic decisions made across the campus, including athletics, in terms of how we balance the budget going into next year.
Can somebody explain to me what the fee was that mentioned a few moments ago?
Higher education price index.
That's
an automatic factor related to the higher education price index as it relates to these two particular fees, which is an equivalent, the higher education equivalent to inflation.
Okay. But the effect would, I think, sort of predates me.
Any other discussion on the motion that is on the table?
I have one more question.
Sure.
I too applaud the effort to make it a little more affordable for teachers. Do we have any projection on offset that loss of tuition? Or what are the expectations in order to, I mean, what are you expecting to happen that makes this a
Sam, comment a minute. One, I think this will increase tuition. A student taking 3 hours will pay $4.95, which is approximately the correct rate. This encourages students to take additional hours they might not otherwise take to complete their degrees in a more timely manner. And frankly, it will make them more competitive with other institutions in the state, which the grade is approximately average of these. A student takes 6 hours, a very competitive rate for a superior program here, and that will encourage them to complete the degree quicker and will get increased revenue because of this, I believe, Sam.
I would concur with that. In other words, if you get the pricing where it is competitive, and you've got quality programs, you will appoint students that currently right now you don't pay it. So the bottom line should increase through increase.
So we are anticipating making up the roughly one-third in the tuition for the degree by increasing the numbers.
I think we're adding courses of $295 an hour that we're going to students only take 3 hours or would go somewhere else. Because of this, they would come here and take 6 hours. And the total number of credit hours generated by the program should, we believe, increase as a result of this.
This dynamic is from my perspective, and I've not been involved directly in the discussion of this particular tuition recommendation. This is one of the few categories of the budget where this is faculty driven. In the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences, they were given a challenge. How are we going to regain the market share for teachers? And so our faculty got in and wrapped their arms around this and how are we going to get competitive with the small private institutions that are lowering their price point to try to capture market share of teachers and graduate programs, principals? Well, exclusively, I guess, in this regard. That's been a part of the adult learner over 1,000 drop in the last 3 or 4 years in adult learners. And we've got to find ways to be competitive in the marketplace. And this won't be the last price point that we reduce the rate of tuition in order to try to recapture a market share for adult learners. In discussions yesterday, Brian, Meredith, and colleagues, regarding the whole adult learner dynamic, and how do we regain a lost market share for adult learners? This wasn't part of that discussion, but this is an example of things we're going to have to do to be competitive for that particular marketplace. So while I don't necessarily like dropping their tuition rate, sometimes you have to understand your market and compete within it. And if it means getting a fee more or paying a lower dollar amount, I agree with Gordon. The theory is we would generate additional revenue than we're likely to generate if we don't drop our price point and watch this drop continue to plague us.
For the last year or two, we've been accommodating this. Dean Evans has been contributing one-time funds from his colleagues to potentially provide scholarships to students to reduce the cost of the student to a rate equivalent to this. This essentially codifies this in the tuition structure, maintaining the net cost to the student.
We think that marketing a discounted rate will be more effective than a published rate. And if you contact us and have any financial concerns about affordability, let's talk to you about a scholarship. So
not an exact science.
This is a simpler message, but we will definitely, Dr. Birch, track the enrollment distinctly to see what our experience has been with a revised pricing structure.
Given that the majority of these courses, at least some of these programs, are online, does this assume then that this will be the rate? I mean, the rate has been higher. It's been 20% higher because it's online. So this will cut out the online completely and just make it.
The online rate, I didn't believe this changed the online rate for this.
But I guess I'm saying, will the additional rate for online be applied to this 495 in 2 days?
Yes.
So it will be more than
there had been no discussion about eliminating the increment for online course registration.
Okay, but these programs, if they are online, this $495, $295 will only apply. It really will be more than that. It'll be 20% more than that.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at our wording. Under distance learning, we have it says graduate, excluding Kentucky P-12, Educator, DMP, and DGC.
So it is the online rate.
So
online
there is not a 20% surcharge on this.
There will not be no surcharge on any of those programs or courses, no matter what the delivery is.
Surcharge, if you wish, is applied only to students who take a blend of face-to-face and online courses, paying online fees for those fraction of their hours that are online.
I'm not being contrary about this. I'm just saying we've got a marketing challenge if we're going to. If the rates are going to be $4.95, $2.95, but if you take it online, it's still going to be $4.95, $2.95.
Yeah. That's correct. That's not one
price. Price. Clarify. Okay. Thank you.
All right. We have a motion on the floor to approve the 2015-16 tuition and fee schedule. I'd like to call for a vote. All those in favor say yay.
Yay. Yay. Yay.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. We have three informational items that we're going to go through.
Two.
Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two. Two
in the page.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, we only have two information items, the quarterly internal audit report, and then I'll come back to the table to talk a little bit about next year's budget development.
We also have a printed copy in front of you.
I'll start off by saying that this is kind of a little different than what we've seen in the past. So basically, that difference is due to the fact that during this past quarter, the planning stage and execution stage of some of these projects outweighed the actual reporting stage. So there's no actual audit reports that were issued during this quarter. However, there were three projects on the audit plan that were completed, and I'll go over that in just a minute. So the breakdown of the planning and execution stage is also in there as well. So the agenda will cover the quarterly update. We'll also look at the action plan's follow-up summary that we'll do every quarter. And then I'll give you a fourth quarter briefing. So I mentioned the three projects that were on the audit plan that were completed this quarter. Pro-card compliance review, there were two cards that were reviewed. The NCAA football ticket reconciliation review was completed. And that's an issue of a memo that's used to report to the NCAA based on the specific guideline from the NCAA. The FISAC review was also completed. That's basically the student financial aid as the internal audit look at their FISAP application and reporting every year. I'll go ahead and say, if you look at the actual hours that were used on all of these projects based on budgeted, and it also looks like there's nothing else that has gone on for the quarter, but that is not the case. So this is everything else that's been worked on up until this point today. And you'll see the execution stage. There's three things that are going on right now. And keep in mind that the planning stage for that also happened in this quarter. And then there are two things that are in the planning stage currently as of today. And we've brought in Grant Morton to help with some of those things as well. If you have any questions, Dan, just let me know. I'll be happy to try to answer those for you. I'll go back to a couple of the two completed projects to give a little more detail. On the procurement card compliance reviews, I mentioned there were two that were looked at, and both received warning status results. Once that happens, the process is to provide those compliance review results to the actual cardholder and then also to our procurement admin office, and they determine what they're going to do about those results within their area. For these two, they decided to do full audits on both of those cards. On the NCAA football ticket reconciliation review, we're, according to the bylaw, we are in compliance for the football, the 2018 season, and that's basically, the bylaw states that once every 2 years, the institution shall average at least 15,000 in actual or paid attendance for home football games. And WKU, they report the paid attendance for the football games. And you can see the results. So you're looking at a rolling 2 years every time you're doing the compliance review. So the 2013, we were over 15,000, and for 2014, we were just under. So the next question is, what are we going to look like for 2015, and we're going to have to hit that 15,000 mark, or we'll be out of compliance. And I'm not sure what that entails if you're out of compliance with that specific bylaw. And I don't know if you want to speak to that, if that's a question or not.
Sure. In terms of if you're not in compliance, it's really just a reprimand. The NCAA has not done anything more than that. I have no concerns whatsoever about that number. The reason the 14 number was a shade lower than what it needed to be is the schedule was a real anomaly in that the first game of the year we had, it was a Friday night before Labor Day weekend. Then we went the whole month of September and did not have a home game. Then the first home game in October was the weekend of fall break. and then we had three November home games. So you really, although there was excitement in a new conference and we had an excellent season in terms of winning, you couldn't have found a worse schedule in terms of the dates and the times of games. It was an anomaly. This year's schedule is excellent. We have two September games. You know, it'll just be much different. So that's not something that I'm worried about at all.
So our next agenda item is the action plan follow-up summary. I'll start with the WKU score. I don't know if you remember the last presentation in December. They had one open item, and that's currently closed. And also the campus emergency preparedness, they have three, and one of those has also been closed. The two that are left open are ones that are probably going to be left open for a while just because of what they're attached to. And I don't know if you recall, but one of those is the IWKU app, which they're trying to work with IT to get that part of the alertness for the campus preparedness. And then the other is the university notification desktop system, which will have to happen after the VoIP phone system gets installed campus-wide. So that target date is way out there for that.
Yes. I should know probably, but what is PVC and PCI?
PCI is the payment card industry compliance.
Okay, and PVC?
That's just our planning, design, and construction department. So fourth quarter preview, this is what it's going to look like when we meet together next time in June. The PCI compliance and IT security, those are in planning stages, as we mentioned earlier. And the Navitas program, that will be coming up probably May, I think, is where that's going to head. The WKU store is dead because per the internal audit charter, I have to communicate to the Finance and Budget Committee anytime a change occurs to the audit plan. And so this is me communicating to you. We're actually pushing that out farther than what we had originally planned. And there are two reasons. One of those is because they are currently going through a process of revamping their point-of-sale system. So they're getting a new system. They're going through that process right now, I think. And they're also still in the process of searching for a new director. So to go in there and do what was going to be a follow-up audit to the previous audit that was done by Grant Thornton back in March of 2014, it would probably defeat the purpose because of the changes that they're going through right now. The Grant Thornton audit had several, which if you notice on the other slide, they had about 19 recommendations. A lot of those were dealing with the POS system and their inventory. So that's the reason for pushing that out. And I'm not sure when that follow-up will actually take place. I think it will depend on how long it takes them to get resituated with this new system and when the new director actually does come in.
We have a last question. Who makes that determination when granting or allowing them to push you out? Is that in your hands, or who calls that shot?
I discuss all of this with Ann. We meet bi-weekly to talk about what changes would maybe need to be made. So it's not just me saying, no, I don't want to do this right now. And those other two factors that I just mentioned, too.
They also kept me informed about this as the chair of the finance committee because of the scheduling issue. And once we discussed it with Grant Thornton doing a deep dive last year, it was to their recommendation, but I agreed to present this today. We can stop that and change that, but the dynamics and the details appeared to me to be quite practical. So that was the reason. I would say that would normally not be the case. If you recall last year, I mentioned about pushing any audit off, and we laughed about the audit that got pushed off of Dr. Grangell's expense report. Everybody's laughing at that, but that was a project that stepped in front of. But I'm very cautious of that, but that's the process that we go through.
Any other questions?
Okay.
The fourth quarter will also be when the annual importance assessment takes place, and I think this will somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but this will be either the second or third time that that's happened. And this is just kind of a simple flow chart of what happens with that assessment. So we take input from the administrative council, and they prioritize all of the areas of importance, and I use that to create the audit universe and then pull from that and create the audit plan. Last year we implemented a map of the areas of importance. I don't know if you remember that or not, but we plotted everything based on significance and likelihood, and we presented that to the committee during the June meeting. So we'll do that again. You'll get to see that map, and also that's exactly when you'll approve the 2016 audit plan. I just wanted to share that, but that is coming up.
That's it. So this week. I want to compliment you on your
newsletter. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. It's for the most part, I think it's been a hit on campus, so I'm really, really glad that that's happening. Two other things, too, that I wanted to share. Ethics and Compliance Hotline update. It was very silent for the quarter until about a week ago. So there have been two other cases that have been reported on. And
when those just can, I have no idea what the protocols were, but when that occurs, you address it independently.
I do. There's a whole process that we've kind of talked about in other meetings that we go through. There's a checklist that I go through. For service and operations of policy and procedures that kind of take me through each step of that. So.
And if it reaches a point where it could be a legal matter, federal matter, state matter, or university policy matter, at some point you would bring it to Ann and Ann would bring it to me?
Or whoever it would be relevant to. Yes.
Okay.
Right. I'm not going to make that decision on my own. The other thing is I wanted to share, and I'm really excited about this. I'm actually getting to hire a staff person, so I will have some help, which is great. And I think with that, potentially, there's going to be some things that we can do more of, and I'm really looking forward to that. I want to be able to add value to this position and to my little department. So I'm excited and I'm thankful for the opportunity. And the other thing is I'm almost been here a year, so it's been awesome and I've really enjoyed it. So thank you. Any other questions?
Well, that.
Let me add that when we add a staff auditor. When we add a staff auditor, it will reduce our dependence on Grant Thornton. But what we're doing is we're developing a budget for FY16 that will have them a bit on a retainer with a smaller budget. We don't have the expertise, especially as it relates to information technology, and that's a tremendous resource for us to be able to tap into that firm for unique audits. So I think this is the best of all worlds for us to have an audit staff of two and supplement it with occasional external resources.
I was just going to make a positive comment that after reading again in the paper this week the embezzlement problems that one of our other state universities has had, had comfort in having Jennifer and Grant Thornton looking over them. We do that too carefully. And it was a bit embarrassing for me that it was the family medicine program at that university that had $2 million missing that nobody apparently noticed. So glad you're around.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rail. Anything else for Ann? We've had a long session here with this committee, but it was quite important. We got a lot of nice things out. And in that, one of my good observations is the cooperation between departments throughout the university. And I think Dr. Evans is just a prime example of how we're focusing on a lot of positive things to get very good results. And so I want to give a couple of issues as well. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think that really helped me.
I need to cover one.
Oh, I'm trying to cut this thing.
Okay, I know. No, we got it. Sorry. We've had a long morning, but I'll cover one last information item. You don't have any materials in your book to trigger your memory that there was one more item.
Thank you.
We are in the process of developing the fiscal year 2016 operating budget. It's a very important variable, obviously, is approval of the tuition and fee schedule. That contributes to developing that budget. We already know that there is, at this point, the enacted budget has no increase in state funding. We have no indications to think that we've gotten good news more recently on a monthly basis on general fund receipts. So we feel reasonably comfortable that we can move forward with the enacted budget state appropriation amount. During this time, April through to May, when we come back and meet with you again in May, what we're doing is that we are reviewing all of our projected fixed cost increases, including our scholarships, looking at returning students versus applicants that have in fact applied for this coming fall. We obviously know from the enacted budget that we will be addressing an increase in retirement system rates based on administrative endorsement. We did change our commitment to the university's health insurance program, so benefits will be front and center as projected fixed cost increases for next year. At this point, I can tell you that a 3% tuition increase is minimal. Last year, we had a 5% increase to address our fixed cost increases and our other operations needs that had to be addressed. So the 3% will be challenging, and I anticipate that Administrative Council, between now and May, will resolve to what degree we'll have to reallocate our base budget to a balanced budget for you for approval in June. So that's an update on budget development.
Just to be clear, this is going to be a very difficult budget challenge. We have some serious challenges to address with regard to the good news of increasing number of students accepting our scholarships and the bubble that works its way through the calendar with regard to 2 years of decline in the part-time adult learners. It's having a dramatic impact on the budget, and it will affect next year's budget, regardless of what we do to address the enrollment challenge for students coming in next fall. This budget will be based on the enrollments for last fall. So it's going to be a very difficult budget challenge, and part of that challenge has the good news of a significantly greater number of very good students are accepting our scholarship offers, but we got to pay for those. So it's which will cause us to probably look at those scholarship thresholds going into next year in order to try to anticipate not having that challenge again next year. But it's going to be a tough spring.
Mr. Chair, I think that down completes.